Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. Chances are probably if you started thinking about the places around the state of Illinois where you're going to find great natural beauty, Chicago would not lead your list. But the fact of the matter is that the city, or areas really close to the city, are places where you can find great natural beauty in Illinois. It may be a matter of knowing where to look, but once you do, you can find it. And in fact, within a short drive, maybe about 50 miles of the city of Chicago, there are five distinct ecosystems, including tall grass prairie, oak savanna, forest, lake shores, wetlands. We'll be talking a little bit about some of the natural beauty of Illinois that you can find specifically in the northern part of the state, not far from the city, in this part of Focus 580. And we have two guests with us. Here in the studio with me is Jason Lindsay. He's a photographer, and he and another photographer, Robert Shaw, have contributed their photographs to a book that's come out fairly recently, which is titled Windy City Wild, Chicago's Natural Wonders. And it's published by the Chicago Review Press, and it has a lot of really stunning pictures in it. So you might just seek it out and in the bookstore, at least take a look at it and see some of the work that Robert Shaw and Jason Lindsay have done. We'll talk a little bit about the book and the photographs, and we also have joining us this morning by telephone Jack Darren from the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club to kind of help us out in talking about some of the natural and conservation issues that the book raises and celebrates. So as we do that, of course, questions, comments are welcome. If you'd like to call in, talk with our guests, the number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. So if you're listening in Chicago or southern Illinois or western Indiana or wherever, you can use that number. We'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, Jason Lindsay, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And here on the telephone with us, Jack Darren. Mr. Darren, thank you.
Good morning.
Glad to have you with us on the show. I'll just start with Jack, and maybe we can talk just a little bit again about this, the notion that I'm sure that people would have, if you start thinking about where's the most scenic parts of the state of Illinois, Chicago is not, maybe not necessarily going to be high on your list, except perhaps for the lakefront. But it is the case that around Chicago, and not very far from Chicago, you can see this stunning array of landscape and a lot of them very beautiful and fairly wild places.
It really is amazing, and Jason's photography here shows it in all its glorious detail. And I think that those of us who know and love the natural areas of the Chicago region sometimes feel like we have a hidden secret. And I think that it's a secret that needs to get out, and people need to learn, and this book can help them learn, that you don't need to go, for instance, to the Everglades to see a beautiful wetland, or to the Great Plains to see a beautiful prairie, or the Pacific Northwest to see a beautiful forest with a clear stream running through it. Chicago, despite the fact that we're the third largest metropolitan area in the country, has a lot of these natural wonders right within our own communities and near our own backyards, and I think that this book not only shows them, but also perhaps, we hope, inspires people to take action to protect them.
Yeah, and that was one of the biggest things we wanted to show with the book. Robert Shaw and I started talking about this book right after he published his first book, Illinois Seasons of Light. We had worked in the Chicago area a little bit on that book, and we discovered these in we had done a lot of research, and it was still a pretty big surprise to us when we found them and visited some of the areas and started finding out that the largest portion of endangered species in Illinois was in the Chicago region, and the most endangered habitats, for the most part in Illinois, were in the Chicago region. So once we started exploring them and seeing them, we felt it was really important to bring this up. It had always been a little bit of a frustration of mine that people felt like they needed to go to Yosemite or Rocky Mountain National Park to find areas that are amazing and worth protecting.
Yeah, and I think isn't also the case that that over time people around Chicago have really made a deliberate effort to try to to try to preserve green spaces and as much as it can be, could be, preserve them the way that they were before there were so many people living there, and before Chicago was Chicago.
Yeah, I think that Chicago has been one of the leaders historically in green space preservation. The Cook County Forest Preserve system was one of the original elements of Daniel Burnham's master plan for Chicago, and it's really thanks to his vision and his colleagues that we have the major holdings of the Cook County Forest Preserve and the Chicago Park District. The Cook County Forest Preserve District has 67,000 acres of holdings, and most of that is in habitat. And there are some areas in Cook County left to be protected, and that's a major focus. But we really have are very fortunate to have that sort of backbone of green space to build off of. And as the suburban counties have grown, residents there have quickly realized that the green spaces that they move out to enjoy are consumed by development, and that's led to fairly aggressive purchases of land by county forest preserve districts in those areas.
Hmm. There, I'd like to talk about some of the photographs and give Jason a chance to talk about some of those that he took, and there are a lot of really nice shots. We're both sitting here and have the book in front of us and have it open to one of the first pictures. A remarkable shot in the sense that it's probably one of those that just come along and you just happen to be lucky enough to be there and catch it. This is, it shows in the same frame an egret, which is a wading bird, one of these, it's white, and it has a very long neck. And just in the background, a white-tailed deer just sort of walking into the frame, and they're both, it's like they're just both sort of strolling along. And you just happened, I guess, you just happened to be there to be able to get it.
Yeah, I was at a in a blind at a Goose Lake Prairie State Natural Area at a prairie pothole, which is a wetland area in prairies, and a lot of animals feed and drink in these prairie potholes, so it's a great place for wildlife photography. I was photographing the egret, and I had seen some deer earlier in the morning but had no idea that this particular deer was there, and he walked into the frame, and I was photographing, and my first thought was just, please don't be at the end of the roll of film. So it was one of the most dramatic moments photographing in the Chicago area to have the experience. And I thought it was important to show the coexistence of animals. I think so often you see isolated close-up images of animals, and so trying to show the setting, the pothole and the wetland, and you know, the luck of having the deer in there, and it's also a buck with a nice rack, which kind of makes it that much more of an interesting image.
I think one of the things that it says about photography is that no matter how deliberate you are and how careful you are in thinking about what sort of image you want, that sometimes things just happen, and it's a matter of luck that
yeah,
you get a picture.
Yeah, being in the field, I think, is one of the biggest ways to get these images, is just spending the time out there. You have to do the research to know when to be where and how to be there so that the animals don't really know that you're there or don't care that you're there. But the most important thing is being out in the field a lot.
Yeah, there's another photograph. I mean, there are a lot of beautiful photographs here, but one that just amazes me is a photograph that you've taken of a pair of mallard ducks. This is at Illinois Beach State Park, and it looks like it must have been sunset.
Yeah,
and the color is—it's just saturated with those sort of deep colors of sunset. And the two of them are in profile, and it looks like you're standing about 2 feet away from them, which I'm sure you're not, because they are completely oblivious to your being there. How did you get that shot?
Well, I was photographing with a 600 millimeter lens, so you can be a long ways away, and I think that's important when you're doing wildlife photography. A lot of people don't understand that you do, for more than one reason, need to be a little bit of a distance away. One thing is to protect the animals and not scare the animals. And the other is that you tend to be less of a concern, so they are doing more of their natural thing. Mm-hmm. I was laying on the ground right on the edge of the wetland, and it's a small wetland pond, and I just kind of do these things without thinking sometimes, and you know, you end up muddy and wet, and but really thankful for the experience afterwards. This one was a little easier than most of the other images, actually, of wildlife. I just happened to be, this was almost like exclusively happened to be at the right place at the right time. I didn't have a lot of time. So this is a wetland at Illinois Beach that's really near the campground. And I had just got to the park and decided to stake out this wetland. And this is the kind of stuff that can happen sometimes. Most of the time, you're not quite that lucky, but...
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite time of day to shoot? Looks to me, I think that a lot of the pictures that you took are in the early morning.
Yeah, mornings and evenings right at sunset. I prefer mornings the most. There's a lot of birds and activity that happen in the morning. And also, I really like the fog and the dew and the calmness. You tend to have less wind, which... in photography is one of the more difficult things to deal with because you have slow shutter speeds, and to get this crisp images without the plants moving. And in the afternoons, lots of times the heat creates a wind, and so it's a little easier usually to work in the mornings, but I just enjoy them more.
Let me turn back here to Jack Darren. Maybe you could say a couple of things about wetlands in Illinois, because it's I'm sure a lot of the kinds of landscape that we're talking about and are photographed in this book are endangered, and we've lost a lot of prairie, and people are trying to bring prairie back. But wetland seems to be one of the most contentious sort of issues. How is Illinois doing in terms of holding on to wetland?
Well, wetlands are a critical part of our state, and a disproportionate number of the species that are threatened or endangered in Illinois use wetlands either for breeding or for feeding or for other stages of their life. And unfortunately, we have lost about 90% of the wetland acreage that was here before Illinois was settled. And that's a big loss to not only wildlife but to people, because wetlands are, in addition to habitat, are important for filtering our drinking water and also for absorbing floodwaters that otherwise might end up in our basements or in our communities. Wetlands in Illinois are protected by federal laws, by the Clean Water Act, which requires permits for altering them. And as such, we have slowed the development of wetlands, but we still see development primarily, and to some extent agriculture, as being the number one consumer of not only wetlands but also prairies and forests and other natural areas in the state. It's still going on, and that's why one of the things that conservationists find themselves working on more and more is smart growth policies, trying to foster land use development patterns that protect these areas.
I should probably introduce again our guests here in the studio with me is Jason Lindsay. He is an award-winning graphic designer and nature photographer. His work has appeared in many publications, including Backpacker, Illinois Audubon, Illinois Steward, Chicago Wilderness Magazine. He lives here in Champaign. He is one of two photographers, the other being Robert Shaw, that have contributed their work to a book titled Windy City Wild, Chicago's Natural Wonders. It's published by Chicago Review Press, has a lot of really stunning photographs in it, and it in a sense, celebrates the natural beauty and the great range of ecosystems that can be found within within the Chicago area, you know, within less than an hour's drive of Chicago. So, again, I'd say certainly if you happen to be in the bookstore, see if you can find the book and take a look at it, because the photographs are really stunning. And also joining us on the telephone, Jack Darren from the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club. We have a couple of callers. Why don't we go ahead and talk with them? First off, in Aurora, line number 4. Hello.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Mm-hmm. Nice talking about this kind of topic. I'm enjoying it much. I had three questions. One, I'm a birder, and I wondered what the condition of the magic hedge is. I've been trying to get there for years, but I haven't been yet, and I hear that it has deteriorated. I wondered what the condition was of Illinois Beach State Park. For a couple of years, they were reporting asbestos there. I don't know where it hit in that area or what it was all about. And then my third question was, and then I'll hang up, what do you think is the greatest that we have in this area of what you have reported on? Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Well, I don't know. One or the other or both of you can...
I might, the first couple, and the third might be an interesting question for us to talk about.
Sure.
The Magic Hedge she's talking about is famous with birders in the Chicago area, and it basically is a copse of bushes and trees that are on Chicago's lakefront near Montrose Avenue on the north side. And basically, that area is all historical lake fill, and this is a point of the lakefront that sticks out far from the shoreline. It's got some trees and bushes on it and other green space. And because so many different migratory birds use Lake Michigan's shoreline as a guide when they're going either north or south in the spring or in the fall, birders have long since realized that they can see amazing diversity of species of birds that stop on this one point for a rest stop along their journey. And I think that the condition is improving, actually, because the Chicago Park District, working with birders and conservationists, is working to expand the native vegetation there. So hopefully we'll be able to see even more species there in the years to come. In terms of Illinois Beach State Park, that was a big controversy and still is to some extent, because starting about 2 years ago, the state park officials there started to find chunks of asbestos washing up on the beach, and that was obviously a big concern for public safety, because asbestos, if breathed in, caused major respiratory damage. It appears that what happened is that there was an old Superfund site near the park from a company that manufactured asbestos, and unfortunately, before it was known, the threat of asbestos was known, it appears that a lot of the asbestos from that former plant was actually dumped into the lake offshore of the park for the purpose of trying to protect the beach from erosion from the waves that come in from the north. And that appears to be the source of that asbestos. So the state's working on that, but it's a difficult problem, and some asbestos, I understand, is still being found.
We'll turn back here to Jason. Maybe he might want to talk about some of these things, particularly the third question about what's the most beautiful place or the most special place. And that's one of these things where you could probably talk about that for a long time, and everybody might have their favorite sort of place that they would want to nominate.
Well, and it depends partially on what kind of a habitat you're looking at. Illinois Beach is one of my favorite areas to spend time. It's a really dynamic area. There's a lot of diversity of species and plants. It's also very unique to Illinois. It's right on the lake in the northern tip of the state, almost right on the Wisconsin-Illinois border. There's a river there called the Dead River, and its name comes from the river is almost like a long pond most of the year, and during heavy water, the mouth of the river opens up into the Lake Michigan, so that's the reason for the name. But it's a beautiful walk along there. Also, in terms of dramatic, I would say Kankakee River State Park, the canyon there along Rock Creek, to me is probably one of the more dramatic areas in the Chicago area. And the cover of the book is from Kankakee River State Park. In terms of prairies, there's a lot of prairies that are pretty nice. I happen to like Goose Lake Prairie for its expanse, and when you walk through there, there's the tall grasses. It doesn't have a huge amount of diversity compared to some of the other prairies, but the tall grasses, you really get the sense of what it might have been like to walk through those prairies for early settlers. The wetlands in the northeastern part of the Chicago area around Volo Bog and Chain Lake State Park are pretty amazing too. There's a tamarack bog at Volo Bog State Natural Area, a lot of frogs, and the tamarack trees are growing on a floating mat of peat, so you walk on a boardwalk when you go through there, and the fall color of the tamarack trees is pretty amazing. So there's unlimited places I would say, up there. There is a visitor's guide in the book that mentions some of these places, and we chose places that had a lot of good public access. The other place I would mention would be Messenger Woods. It's a Will County Forest Preserve, and I think it probably has the best wildflower display in the state of Illinois. In the early spring, the bluebells, white trilliums, I haven't seen white trilliums grow like that anywhere else. So,
you, Mr. Darren, you want to nominate any particular places?
I second all those. I also really like Glacial Park in McHenry County, which is, you've got Nipissing Creek there, which is one of our highest quality prairie streams. You've got some really interesting glacial topography with rolling glacial hills called Kames and Prairie. There's even a bog there. That's one of my favorite places to go.
One other place that I forgot to mention was Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore. The book does cover Indiana Dunes. We are covering the area similar to the Chicago Wilderness Organization's area of how they define Chicago. It's a 55-mile radius from downtown. And Indiana Dunes State Park and National Lakeshore is probably the best place to go to see the transition of diversity from the lake. As a walk, you walk inland at Indiana Dunes, and you see the transition right before your eyes from the lake into bogs and dunes, and eventually into forest and prairies. So that's a really interesting place as well.
We're already about the midpoint of the show here, and we've got another caller we'll get to. I guess I should just introduce again our guest. Joining us here by telephone, Jack Darren from the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club. Here in the studio with me is photographer Jason Lindsay. He and Robert Shaw have put their photographs together in a book which is called Windy City Wild, Chicago's Natural Wonders. It's published by Chicago Review Press, and as Jason has just mentioned, it concentrates on some of the naturally beautiful places that you can visit that are all within 55 miles of downtown Chicago, and places that represent this wide range of ecosystems, everything from wetlands to tall grass prairie to oak savanna. And there are a lot of really nice photographs in the book, so you might want to take a look at it. And we have questions, so we have a caller with a question, and there is that possibility to call in if you have questions or comments or you'd like to talk with a guest. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Freeport, line number one. Hello.
Yeah, so David, did I hear you correctly at the start of the program say Chicago itself was ugly?
No, I don't think I did. No, I think there are a lot of beautiful things about Chicago. I mean, it's got some.
The lakefront is very impressive.
The lake, yes, you are quite right. And you know, it's got a lot of interesting buildings and a built landscape. But no, I was not meaning to suggest that Chicago is ugly.
All right, I just want to suggest that in Northwest Illinois here we have Joe Davis County, Galena, with all the unglaciated hills. Yeah, that's very photogenic. And it's been developed quite nice around Galena itself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people drive all the way from Chicago up to Galena to visit it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Galena area is really beautiful. Joe Davies County, there's Apple River Canyon State Park, I think, over there. And Robert's first book, Illinois Seasons of Light, has images from the Galena area and a lot of other areas in Illinois. The book is Illinois Seasons of Light. This book, we really wanted to focus attention on the Chicago region to mainly, show people that these places exist, and I think it surprised a lot of people. I know people that I've talked to and shown the book to have been surprised. Like Jack said, some people that live in the Chicago area won't be surprised by this because they have known about it for quite a while. It's not a secret, but I don't think it's a popular known thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm just there's a picture here that I'm looking at in the book. It's one of Jason's photographs from Illinois Beach State Park, and the thing that strikes me about it is there's a place that that I like to go that's an island in the Atlantic Ocean, and this reminds me very much of what it's like in some of those places where you walk along a rocky beach and the water, which looks like it goes on forever. And I think, maybe again, some people who would say the kind of places they like to go are the coasts, you can get something like that experience if you go around the lake.
Yeah, Illinois Beach State Park is great for that, and they have a great campground there. I remember one night sitting there at night, and it was about midnight, and the full moon was up, and the sound of the water coming in. I don't think it could have been much different experience on most coasts of major oceans. Also, Indiana Dunes just absolutely blows me away sometimes at the crystal clear and the blueness of the water. You feel almost like you're in the Caribbean there. It's the blueness of the water. So if people take the time and, you know, focus their vision a little more narrowly, there are industrial places around some of these parks. So you can't, you know, get completely into the vision like you may be able to on a remote island, but it's definitely possible, especially I think in the mornings. There tend not to be as many people out, and the traffic and things like that aren't as bad. So it's very possible in the Chicago region to find these experiences.
Yeah, this, I think, too, this photograph illustrates something that that I think is true of all of the pictures in this book, and maybe this is one of those things that separates the work of a pro from somebody who just is going out and snap photographs, is that they have great depth of field. That is, in photography, that means that the stuff that's in the photograph is in focus, it looks like, almost forever. And on this, what you're doing is you're looking down this rocky beach, and it almost looks like you could count the rocks. It's that sharp, and the focus stays that sharp all the way back into the background.
Yeah, and for this book project, we really wanted to emphasize the wider, grander landscape from here to there to show people. We felt like if we did a lot of close-ups and a lot of narrow focus photographs, that people might, you know, criticize it a bit and say, well, you know, in anybody's backyard, you can go out and find things, you know, if you look close enough. So we really did try to spend a lot of time finding the landscapes that are broad and wide and you can see for a long ways in a lot of directions. To make people realize that those are there too. It's not just the real narrow areas. In terms of photography, yeah, we use, you know, the professional equipment, the professional film, probably more than anything, time and patience. Lots of times to get the right conditions, you may visit an area four or five times. I know some of the photographs, in the book were made waiting 4 or 5 hours in the exact same location, you know, moving within a foot or two of each of your area to get the photograph. So that makes a big difference. I've really come to enjoy those times where you're sitting there for 4 hours in the same place, that you get a sense of somewhere, an experience that you don't get if you just kind of visit and drop in. You know, the animals start getting back to normal, and I'm usually running around kind of like crazy trying to find photographs. So I enjoy sitting there and hanging out and waiting for the image to be right.
We have some other folks to talk with. Next caller is Belgium. This is line number 4. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I know your guest is mainly focused on the Chicagoland area, and he did mention that that area up there has a particular spot that's very, very nice in your wildflowers. But at the same time, I would highly like to recommend the Chautauqua Wildlife Area in Mason County along the Illinois River. It's essentially pristine, and it has a lot of species that are not available anyplace else in the United States anymore. And then on top of that, there's an amazing number of birds, which is just because that's what it's set aside for, is for birds. So that spot may not be the best wildflower spot in all of Illinois. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks for the call. Mr. Darren, is this a place you're familiar with?
Yeah, the Illinois River is certainly an amazing resource, and it's interesting. Most of the images in Jason's book and in Chicago really form the headwaters of the Illinois River, except for those right on the lakeshore, which drain into the lake, of course. But everything away from the lake really drains into the Illinois River, and, of course, the Illinois River's plight has received a lot of attention in the last couple of years from state government. And that's a really welcome sign, because we do need to try to restore as much of the river's natural function as possible. It used to be one of the most productive freshwater fisheries in the world, and we've lost many of those functions because of not only pollution but also changes to the river's physical nature. The Chautauqua Refuge that the caller referred to, as well as some other ones, Meredosia Refuge, Lake Emmequan, are really attempts to restore the wetlands that the river once had to allow it to flood naturally, to absorb floodwaters, and to allow the habitats along its banks to restore its nature. So one of the things that conservationists are working is to get funding from Congress and the federal government to purchase the acres to complete those refuges. So that's a subject of major importance.
All right. It's also a place where a lot of bald eagles are now returning to nest and migrate through that area. So it's pretty remarkable for that, too.
All right, very good. Let's go to another caller. This is Will Matt, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I have a question about what makes for birds being more prominent along different parts of the lakeshore. Now, in Wilmette, there is a very long, I think it's one of the longest extended sandy beaches in the city itself. It goes all the way from where the Baha'i Temple is all the way to apartments close to Kenilworth. And I walk there year-round, and I often, I'm not a birder myself, but I'm always seeing birders. And I'm wondering, you know, what makes certain parts of the lakeshore more enticing to those that are moving from north to south and so on?
Well, I think different birds will look for different types of habitat and structure, but depends what they're stopping for. If they're looking for something to eat, it may be something, you know, the type of habitat where they might find the insects. If they're looking for shelter from the wind or a place to rest, then trees or shrubs may be more appealing to them. And yes. Different birds like different things. Some birds like to roost in trees. Some birds prefer grassy habitats. So that's why really the trying to restore the original diversity of habitats, not only along the lake but in the rest of the region, is so important, so that we can try and provide a home for all the travelers that are moving through.
I see. Okay. Well, it's a very interesting program. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And other questions, comments are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. This is, we're sort of at a disadvantage here because we're trying to talk about Book of Photographs on the radio. So that's a little difficult. But are there particular pictures that, Jason, you, for some reason, something about them makes them for you stand out that we might talk a little bit, and maybe we'll try and describe to people the picture.
Okay. Also, these images, many of them are available on my website as well. So if people happen to have access to the web, they could go there and see a couple portfolios of the images. It's perceptivevisions.com. Also, like David said, the books will be available in the bookstores, or should be now. Well, one photograph that sticks out in my mind, and a lot of it is the experiences of a fox kit at a den in Lake County. It was near Illinois Beach State Park, and I spent 4 weekends with these baby foxes. They call them kits, and I really got the sense of why they would call them a kit as opposed to a pup. They tend to move and jump and wiggle and things very similar to cats. It was an amazing experience. There were 8 of them. The mother would make a slight little yelp, and all of a sudden they'd be running right back into the hole and into the den. And the moving back and forth between the dens, it was a really special experience to spend that much time with them.
It's a great picture, and it's one of those that, again, it seems that you're I'm sure that you used a long lens and they were not aware of you, but it's one that makes you feel like you're sitting right there in front. And it's also an interesting color contrast, because the and I think it's true of all the pictures in this book, that color is really saturated, almost to an unnatural kind of extent. And this is one where the color contrast is really dramatic, because the fox is that sort of orangey, you know, cinnamon kind of color, and yet the background has this really strong green from foliage and an almost violet kind of color in the background, and the color contrast is also really very strong.
Yeah, and the photograph was taken on a sunny day in the shade, so you get the blue sky is what lights up a lot of the area, so that creates the bluish color in the background. The film we use for most of the images in the book is Velvia. It's a Fuji film, and it's an extremely saturated film. It's specifically made for publishing, so they overcompensate for the colors a little bit, because in the printing, you tend to lose some of that. I think one reason that the colors are saturated is that printing is starting to catch up and starting to be better, so you don't necessarily need to overcompensate quite as much in the field. Also, in this image, actually, they were aware of me because there were several den sites, so I couldn't really set up a blind very easily. I was also in an open area. They were across the creek, and I think that made them feel more comfortable with me. But I spent 4 weekends there, and I wore the same clothes every day. And just I think your body movements, the way you speak to the animals through your movements, they get a sense of whether you're comfortable, and that makes them comfortable. Hmm. So after several days in a row, the babies did start to get more comfortable with me. The mom also got somewhat comfortable. The dad never really did like to be around when I was around, but it was across the creek with a long lens.
Yeah. I think this is, and maybe this is something that Jack Darren knows about, but I think that it's true that the red fox has been in one of the most successful and one of the most adaptive animals to being around human beings and living in different conditions. And again, it probably might not be the kind of thing that if you live in a city, you're used to seeing. But I'm sure now in more and more rural areas, people see fox.
Yeah, they really, you know, there's a category of wildlife that has adapted very well to the sort of semi-open suburban landscape. Fox is one of them. Coyote, increasingly, we're not so much seeing, but hearing about or seeing evidence, because a lot of these animals are either shy or nocturnal, so you know they're out there in increasing numbers, but you may not see them as much. Deer, certainly. Canada geese, obviously, have become a nuisance species in many areas, and particularly actually with geese, they have become a nuisance species because precisely we have altered the habitat so substantially. The beautiful close-mowed green corporate campuses around a retention pond that has probably replaced a natural wetland that was surrounded by tall grasses. That artificial environment is actually very appealing to Canada geese because they feel like they could see predators coming from a long way away. So you see incredible concentrations of them that create all kinds of problems. So I think we're learning that certain segments of the wildlife population do benefit in the short term from our alterations of the landscape, but we do make things get out of balance, and we're learning how to restore those. Mm.
Speaking of Canada geese, here Chase and I are both looking at another of his pictures that is of a flock or a number of birds taking off from the water. I think, you know, when in photography class, the teachers give students these kinds of assignments. They say, go out and make a picture for me that shows something. I think if you were going to say, show me a picture that shows movement or flight, this would be a pretty good shot, I think.
Yeah, and the reason for that is precisely what Jack was talking about. This image, I wanted to show Canada geese in the Chicago region because they are such a prominent species in the area. But I also knew that I needed to show them in a way that they seemed more wild and less tame. So I specifically went out to capture images of them that showed them in a more natural way. And this is an image of the geese taking off from a wetland at Illinois Beach State Park in the fall. So there's the blazing red color, slightly blurred because I was panning the camera, which means you move the camera at the same, or you try to move it at the same speed as the animals as they're moving, or race cars, or anything that moves. You pan the camera with it. If you're shooting at a slower shutter speed, then you get the movement in the background of the image during that time that the camera's moving and the shutter's open. But if you're moving right at the same speed as the animals stay sharp.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a couple images of Canada geese in the book, and like I said, I was really trying to capture a feeling of how geese might have been perceived years ago as opposed to now.
Well, it's really interesting to hear the explanation of how it is you do that, because I would have, I would have no idea how you would manage to make that picture where, as you say, the geese are in the foreground and are generally the images of them are quite sharp, and the background is blurred with the water on below, and in the back what's clearly autumn foliage, because it's those colors. But that's a great trick.
Yeah, it's a pretty dynamic way to make images. I've been experimenting with it in other situations to show movement. Photographing grasses, for instance, I've always been captured by the movement of grass, and it's something that's hard to show, I think, on film. So for some of the dune grasses, the grasses are a little bit blurry. Some of the prairie grasses, there's a shot of an oncoming storm, and the grasses are blowing in the wind. So it's something hard to catch on still film, but that I've been experimenting more with.
Darren, I know that you're familiar with the photographs and with these places. Do they, when you look at them, do you see things that somehow seem new to you, as if you're seeing something that you didn't see when you actually were standing there and looking at the place?
Well, certainly, especially with the wildlife shots, you really do get the sense that you are an unseen visitor, getting to see a side of life that we either don't get to see or don't know exists right in our own neighborhoods and communities. So that's really amazing, and it's one of the most special feelings I get from the book. But also there are. You really do get the sense of being off the beaten path. We don't see trails, that kind of thing, in the book. You really do get the wonderful sensation of being in the wilderness, and that's something that is a valued commodity in this major metropolitan area. When daily life can always get pretty hectic, it's nice to know that these areas are not too far of a walk, bike ride or drive away, and now they may be right there on your coffee table as well.
Yeah. One thing that I'd like to maybe both of you can talk a little bit about. People may have some sort of a sense of what prairie is, and the fact that it's something special, and that we have it here, and that people have tried to restore that. But there's another kind of landscape that is also very special that we have, and that's the savanna. And I wondered maybe if you could, both of you could sort of talk a little bit about what that is.
Savannah is basically where the forest and the prairie meet. You have some trees, usually hardwood trees like oaks and hickories, but they're very sparse. There are grasses and flowers and other plants growing beneath the trees. There's a lot of sunlight that reaches the forest floor, so you have a very healthy grass and other plant community below the trees, and it's something that's very, because it is the intersection of the prairie and the woodland ecosystem, it's a rare ecosystem, and it's one that we relatively recently have realized the value of.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's also one that I think people are starting to think about trying to preserve, because there have been an invasion of non-native species, and that kind of landscape, it's very special. And I think people are looking at places where they're trying to get back to restoring that to the way that it was.
That's right. I think with the savanna, like all ecosystems, is very dependent on natural functions. And before settlement, those functions included wildfire or fire set by Native Americans. And early conservationists thought that the best way to save an ecosystem was to build a fence around it and minimize intrusion or activity in it. What we're seeing is that they really do require active management to restore them to health and maintain them, because wildfires are no longer sweeping across the landscape. And we do have species that were brought into this country either for our gardens or by accident that are overpopulating themselves in our preserves. So the volunteer stewardship restoration movement, which in many ways started here in Chicago, is critical to seeing that our forest preserves present not just a quiet place to go, but also a thriving example of these ecosystems.
Hmm. Here's we're also looking here another picture that's a nice photograph that shows oak savanna.
Yeah, the oak savannas, I think the thing that is so special to me about them are the big old oak trees that grow on the savannas. They just have that look of age and knowledge and depth, and they have sprawling branches that grow sideways and even down to a certain degree. So capturing that on film was a challenge, and something that I felt was really important to show in the book, because people are somewhat unaware of the savanna. Many of the communities in Illinois and in the Midwest were first built around the savannas because they had open areas underneath trees. They didn't need to remove a lot of trees in order to build the homes, and it provided a source of trees to build the homes and for fire. People also liked it because they felt a little bit more protected from the prairie fires that came through. So it was one of the first settled areas in Illinois, and that's another reason for there being such a small amount of them left.
This is another, I think it's a very nice, one of a lot of nice photographs in, but it also makes me think about how the process of doing nature photography is so... There must be some special tricks, because I know that I'm sure lots and lots of people have had the experience of being someplace that was really beautiful, and they say, okay, I want to make a photograph of this. They take the picture and they get it back, and somehow it just doesn't, it does not convey the experience of the place or the sense of the place that you get when you're standing there. Now, these photographs, though, they do. I'm sure they do. How do you do that?
I think one of the big things that people... do when they're taking a photograph is they see something that's beautiful, and our eyes and our brains naturally isolate that element, and so we don't see the surrounding other 100 acres in our eyes mind when we're looking at it. So when you put the camera, you really have to do the job that your brain normally does, I think, of editing and isolate elements and look at it and study it and see what the thing is that makes it so special, what it is that creates that essence.
Well, I'm sorry to say that we're going to have to stop, because we've come to the end of the time. We want to say, first of all, to Jack Dearon from the Sierra Club, thanks very much for spending some time with us today.
Thanks for having me. It's a beautiful book.
It certainly is. And I would suggest people go to the bookstore and see if you can find it and take a look at it. It's Windy City Wild, Chicago's Natural Wonders, published by Chicago Review Press, with photographs by Robert Shaw and Jason Lindsay. And Jason, thank you very much.
Thank you, David.